Hello, welcome back to Dating Games. I'm your host, Bobby Temps. And first off, I've got a request about reviews. You've heard me mention them before. They are important. Us podcasters aren't making it up. They help people find the show. They help us keep it going, keep the lights on. And we would really appreciate if you leave one. You can even do it. I challenge you to do it right now. Tap away on Apple Podcasts or the Stitcher website. It can be something nice. It can be something horrible, as long as you leave one. And we will read some of them out in future episodes. It also helps us get really incredible guests like today's guest, who does stand-up comedy and creates cathartic performance art in the privacy of her own home, something she was doing actually long before the pandemic. In 2018, she was nominated for Best Newcomer at the Edinburgh Comedy Awards for her debut hour called Fight. And then she came back in 2019, where she performed her second solo show called If/Then. You may also know her from appearances on Mock the Week, The Blame Game, Griefcast podcast, and Your Little Brother's Dreams. And the reason why we laugh is I've pulled that from her website, so that's not me saying it, but it's all just so well written. And a lot of that is relevant, not only to what we'll talk about today, but also the world that we're in, because this year there is no Fringe Festival, and so we have Zoom and this strange world we're living in instead. So please welcome to the show, Olga Koch.
Thank you so much for having me. What a welcome.
You are very welcome. I'm assuming you wrote most of that, so I don't know if I can take full credit. Did you not realize?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I realized. Yeah, The Little Brother's Dreams. That's has me written all over it. I write all my own copy. If you see anything written about me in third person, I likely am the person who wrote it.
I love it. You're really just monopolizing everything you've written, and also everything anybody else has written is still somehow you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think you have a story to share relating to people's little brothers.
Yes. So to preface this, I don't think I do this so much anymore, because I think, like, I basically at the age of, I want to say 23, I started dating a 19-year-old, and then into 24, I dated like two 19-year-olds. It kind of became my brand that I would like hit on younger men. And again, I need to highlight the fact that they were comfortably legal. I also need to highlight the fact that, like, when you're 23 and they're 19, yes, sure, they're younger, but it's not like a huge age difference. Because now that I talk about it at the age of 28, I just think it sounds way creepier than it was at the time. Like, all these people are in their 20s right now. Please, I promise. So that being said, I was dating one of these younger men. I love how you're like, I still don't think it's okay. And you know what? I respect that. We all draw the line in different places. As long as
my question is why? That's my question. Why younger men? Because I know, like, Catherine Ryan has a whole bit about why not younger men. That's why my face is doing things.
I mean, I had all these comedy reasons that it was like younger men because they're so easy to impress, and because, like, every single time they met me, they'd be like, oh my God, Olga, you know so much about World War II. But in reality, oh God, there's probably like a really nuanced psychological reason where, like, I guess I was like wanted to be dominant in a relationship, I suppose. And that, like, is where I feel comfortable, and it's easier to be dominant in a relationship with a younger person. That doesn't
make me sound very good. I think that's interesting. We'll come back to that. But you were going to share a story about dating younger men.
So I was on a work trip. My day job required me to go to Ukraine at the time. And I took my boyfriend with me, who was, again, like 4 years younger than me. And it was like very exciting and cool to be like, I'm going to whisk you away on a sexy weekend to Kyiv, Ukraine, the Paris of Eastern Europe. So we show up. We have sex. I've said it. We've done it. I've said it. It so transpires that there's like sort of an accident and we need to go get the morning after pill urgently. So the two of us and this boyfriend who doesn't speak Russian or Ukrainian, he has no idea where he is. We have to go to the pharmacy and get the morning after pill. The problem is that I moved away from Russia when I was 14, and I just don't know what the Russian word for or the Ukrainian word for morning after pill is, because I'd never needed to use it at the age of 14 or younger. So I show up at this pharmacy with my boyfriend, who's already pissing himself. And I'm like, fuck, what do I say? What do I say to the pharmacist? What is it that I request? And I come up to the pharmacist and I'm like, I just directly translate the words morning after pill. So I'm just like, can I please have a morning after pill? And she looks at me and she's like, morning after what? And at this point, I'm like, oh, fuck, this is not, like, it's obviously a colloquialism. That's not a medical name of the fucking pill. So, like, I'm on the verge of tears. I tell my boyfriend, who is absolutely fucking horrified, he starts crying. Then we're just both, like, on the verge of tears slash actually fully crying. And we're just like, what if it's illegal in Ukraine? What if we just, like, fully just requested something that's completely illegal in this country? Because who the fuck knows, right? And we're like, oh my god, we're going to jail. And, like, he's just convinced that he's going to, like, not ever going to see his parents again because he's going to stay in Ukraine for the rest of his life. And, yeah, it was, like, a really horrifying moment. And then we had to do a lot of, like, diagramming of, like, him pretending I have a big belly and stuff until she finally was like, oh, okay, and just gave it to us. But honestly, the microcosm of that fear between her not understanding what we needed and her giving it to us was...
Yeah, the way you've described it, I can almost hear it in slow motion. Slow motion,
this
silent charade.
This 19-year-old is like, my life is over.
And so I want to come back to something you mentioned earlier about being in control or being dominant in relationships, because I think that's something I can really relate to. And it took me a while to sort of realize. Seemingly everyone around me did. And I date people of all gender, so it doesn't seem to make a difference. People just assume I'm in charge if they get into a relationship with me. And it took me a surprisingly long time to realize that was what was going on. Then it's been a bit of a process of understanding that and encouraging them to still have a voice in the relationship and not totally to surrender to this person who's in charge. Because then the scary part of that is, what if I drag them around and they don't actually want to do any of the things I find fun? So certain people, like those that seem to have very little opinion, I don't think can date me. Because I don't know if they actually want to be there. Like, I think we've all met someone that has seemingly no opinion on food. And I'm like, but what if hate all the restaurants I'm choosing? I need something. So it's trying to find that balance. But yeah, so you also have that dominance in relationships.
Yes. And I think it's not, I think it's more like that's who I am in relation, not necessarily romantic or sexual relationships. I think that's like, that's what my personality is. And so, like, you'll see that in friendships, I'm similar. I think I'm similar with my family members. I think I'm similar in work settings. It's just that, like, that's how I am. Oh, God. I'm, like, terrified of saying something. Again, if we're thinking of, like, a heterosexual setting, I feel like men that I've been on dates with but nothing worked out are kind of reluctant to give away power. And so, like, a woman who wants power is probably an anomaly. So, like, that is, like, almost like a kink or a weirdness. Whereas, like, because the default is man being in charge, no one thinks that's weird. But also, that has bitten me in the ass because I have been on dates with women where I have a very dominant vibe, but I don't have as much experience with women. So they'll be like, oh, she knows what she's doing because she has a very loud voice. But I really don't.
Although the funny thing is, and maybe this is just me and the confidence I've worked very hard to build up, but I seem to get away with it anyway. People just seem to assume that I know things because I seem like in charge, strangely. And yeah, I don't really know. I had it recently where, well, I say recently, obviously not recently in the pandemic, back when life was, you know, somewhat normal. I went on a date and I can't even remember what it was, but I like complained about something in the restaurant and they straight away changed it. And the person I was on a date with was like, how did you know that would work? I was like, I didn't. Like, I just didn't like this thing. And so I spoke up about it and then they fixed it. I was like, so people just assume that I know things sometimes. So I think actually in experience, I can pretend not to have.
Oh my god, that's amazing. You're like overall the equivalent of just wearing a suit into anywhere and just being let in.
A bit, yeah. And also, and I'm aware part of this is like the white maleness of it all, that I have been raised to think that's good, whereas women are taught that certain levels of dominance are, you know, them being bossy and are a negative thing, whereas me, I have leadership capabilities. But I'd be interested to know if there's a crossover here as well. I think the downside of some of that can be that because you have a level of control and you're used to people sort of following your lead in any kind of, you know, including friendships, do you think that then means you find yourself sort of performing? And you're almost like playing the comedian, or you're like the night's entertainment without meaning to.
Oh my God, absolutely. Absolutely. The amount of times where like I will literally find myself, I'll be in a group of people and for no reason whatsoever, even if like I'm invited into the group of people, I'll be like, I'm responsible for the conversation flowing. And the second there's a lull, I'm like, Olga, you dropped the fucking ball. You need to ask them if they have any siblings. And then a part of me is like, who the fuck do you think you are? Like, shut up. No, this is not the Olga show. This is not your responsibility. And I think I want to say that it comes from a good place of like really desperate to make everyone feel really comfortable, but also at the same time, almost like as if acting as if I know what's better for people than they do, which I need to constantly check myself.
Yeah, I definitely find that in a dating situation, that can be a bit of a trap with me, that I end up just kind of performing a good boyfriend thing because I'm so busy in my head thinking I'm very intense, and a lot of people find that I come across as quite intimidating, whether that's my confidence or my work or I don't know, the fact that I have a lot of opinions about things that are quite well thought through. I think they're well thought through. And so then generally on a first date, I'm trying to taper a lot of that back. And the default thing for me then is let them talk. But if I do too much of that, then I find myself interviewing them. And then that's also an unfair power dynamic.
Have you ever been called out on it?
No, I don't think I have. I think I've had it where I can tell that someone's uncomfortable if I'm asking too many questions. And so I tone it back. But I think for the most part, people just like talking about themselves. So,
oh my God, it's so true.
Problem.
Oh my God,
but
so
you
true.
Have, I think, specific questions you like to ask on dates. You do interview them.
Oh my God, stop it. Yes, I do. See, you interviewing me right now is a testament to people loving to talk about themselves. So we're really just proving it in practice. I do have questions. I have like, I think, I mean, like the reason that the manic pixie dream girl stereotype exists is that like that thing is real.
And sorry, just define that if anyone's unsure.
Yes. So a manic pixie dream girl is a term coined by a movie critic about the film Elizabethtown about Kirsten Dunst character, who's like this essentially fairy character that just exists to take a depressed man out of his funk and just exists to be quirky and fun and interesting and sexy and all of these things. But at the end of the day, they just end up being at the service of the male protagonist. And like, obviously, because he coined the term in that movie, it's a recurring thing that's been in movies and books and all over for ages. And I think this phenomenon of like being the cool girl, as if in the movie Gone Girl or whatever, it's so real. And I grew up constantly being like fetishizing the altar of like the tomboy and just constantly like being the girl who can hang, being the girl who doesn't like drama, all that. And so I feel like as much like the more progressive I try to become, the more I want to confront my own internalized misogynies. There are still these relics of the manic pixie dream girl that are still inside of me. And I think like the first date is really when my manic pixie dream girl like is in full force, where I'm just like giggling and being complicated and being like, let's go skinny dipping and all this kind of awful shit. And one of the components of like my manic pixie dream girl performance is the quirky questions I like to ask that are just, if anything, say less about the person I'm asking them, but more about me for asking the questions. Do you know what I mean? And also they're like really good to fall back on if the person you're on a date with is really, really boring.
Yeah, so what kind of questions are we talking?
Oh God, I feel like I'm giving away, first of all, I'm giving away all my secrets. Second of all, I'm blanking on, I can think of like three. Like I love to be, I love hypothetical scenarios. Who's your most favorite fictional Bobby?
My favorite fictional, like person?
Bobby.
I'm confused.
Your name is Bobby, right? Are there Bobbies in fiction that you like?
I don't know. I don't know if there are.
Like, oh my God, are there? Surely there's like cartoon characters called Bobby, no?
Probably.
Bob the Builder? Are you a fan of Bob the Builder?
Well, I feel like I'm really undermining your questions. I'm so sorry. Bob the Builder, I don't remember. I don't remember much of my childhood. I do know that I watched it. Try another one.
Okay. A gun to your head. You're about to die. What is the song that, which like the lyrics of which you can quote beginning to end? And it can be like a one, it's not like I'm blue da boo dee da ba die. It has to be. Actually, that's quite a complicated song. Just every single lyric you know, including the oohs and ahs and la la las.
Probably a lot of ABBA and a lot of Gaga, but the way you asked that question made me think of like very literal of like, if there was a gun to my head and I'm about to die, which song comes into my head? Which is a very different question. And the one I thought of was an
artist. Wait, what song is that?
So an artist called Lenka from Germany, and it's the end of the world. And it's like a romantic song about the apocalypse. And I think that probably says a lot about my personality. But see, no, you're right. Good. These
you
questions work. Put
see,
me on the spot.
We're having a conversation.
Yeah, okay, right. So you've convinced me. It works, these questions. I'm not good at small talk, right? I can't really do chatting about the weather for more than 2 seconds. Like,
right.
So I think this actually could be quite handy for me to start thinking of these questions, because my default questions are like really intense stuff, or like just finding out about their life. Questions are a bit more like, let's have a hypothetical chat, I think is more fun. But it's interesting that you contrast it with the manic pixie dream girl fantasy, in that I can see the attraction of it, right? Both as a male and like from a female perspective, you want to be the fun, quirky girl, and you want to sort of entertain him. And particularly on a first date, there's that pressure to be like, want me, I'm pretty and I'm fun and I'm easy and I'm not like your ex. Like, you're trying to perform all these things. But then at the same time, it's still a performance, and eventually they have to find out the real you. So one of the other things I try and do, as much as I'm like trying to sort of seem maybe a little bit more chill than I actually am, I'm also trying to drop in certain things so that they have an idea, that they don't think I'm just totally easygoing, because then
I'm lying. Of course. That's very important. That's very, very important. Starts the question of like, how much are we all performing and to what end? Like, what happens if I successfully convince a dude that I'm a manic pixie dream girl? What the fuck do I do afterwards? Like, do you know what I mean? Because like, that's not sustainable. What am I doing 2 months into that, 2 years into that? So I think it's an interesting thing that a lot of the time, some of my most non-casual friends will put on a huge show of being the most casual about sex ever. And so it makes me think like, okay, well, what if you succeed in creating this like casual persona? The peak success of that is exactly the opposite of what you are and what you want. So it's a good question to ask yourself. I used to date a guy who, like, in our first few months of dating, convinced me that he was like really cool and into drugs, and hadn't taken one drug. So I was like, I was buying us tickets to like raves and shit and being like, is this what you want? And then it turns out that he really, really didn't. So what are you trying to achieve, listeners? Think about that.
Yeah. And the scary thing that you've made me think about is, to what extent can we even be genuine on a date, right? Because you're going, you've probably dressed up, or if you haven't, you've intentionally not dressed up, and you've like chosen somewhere. It probably isn't somewhere you generally go. And then, you know, every time they ask you about your music taste, you think of like an obscure band that you like, but don't actually listen to that much. Like, is it even possible to be genuine in a situation where it's actually just two people trying to impress each other enough that the other person fancies them without letting on their level of interest? Like, it's such a weird chess match.
Yeah, and then it becomes just all ego. You're making me think of another stereotype. I think that there's this fantasy that all of us have, is that, oh, I secretly wish one of my close friends was secretly in love with me. And obviously it's planted into us by movies and stuff. But I think part of it is that like, oh, I secretly wish someone was in love with the me that isn't the performance. And the only people who know that are my close friends, right?
And actually, I'm someone that has got into quite a few relationships via friendships. And in many ways, that kind of objectively makes more sense to me. Even though I know not conventionally what happens, I'm sort of like, you get gradually closer and closer, and then you're in a relationship. Why aren't we doing that?
Why are we going on dates with strangers and touching them?
Yeah, Olga, why are we putting ourselves through it? Tell me.
I have no idea. I genuinely have no idea. I have tried, I think, to have like flings with friends, and it just never works. All we do is like end up laughing and can't see each other in that way. So I think the fantasy is real. And if you're able to do it like you can, that's amazing. But I think there are reasons why we're friends with our friends and not lovers.
Right, because that's the part of why the performance maybe is necessary to an extent, because if you don't put somebody on a certain pedestal, and of course, we know that there can be far too much of a pedestal, but maybe you need to pedestalize them a little bit in order to put up with the awkwardness of the dating phase, right? Because if as soon as there was a like weird moment or a silence, you would just say, oh, well, that's it, done. We would never get past the first date with anyone. So we kind of have to go in invested, but then we also can't idolize the person. So how do we balance that?
I love how you're asking me as if I know.
I think you know. I think you've got all the answers.
This is true. I do have all the answers. I think dating, as you just said, the like dating phase is weird because dating is performance. Like, why are we giving each other like dead plants and like pretending to eat food that we don't like and spending exorbitant amounts of money and waiting 4 hours to text someone back? It's all a game. It's all performance. And I think to an extent we can't do the dating phase with a friend is that because the friend is going to be like, what the fuck are you doing? Why am I waiting 4 hours to text back a person I've known for 10 years? This is insane.
Yeah, well, that's it. Maybe you're too into your setup of the friendship at that point.
Yeah. And also just like this performance and this weirdness that you're doing at the end of the day, I think you can only do it with a stranger because like, I don't know who else I could act like that dickish to in my life that isn't a person I'm dating who's like new.
So what do you mean by dickish?
But just like playing games and just being like, I don't know if I'm free. And it's like, imagine fucking telling your mom that, I don't know. And then like waiting 4 hours and then posting a strategic Instagram that makes me look like I'm having a really good time. Like, what is that?
I think what I'm learning is you plan these things out a lot more than I do. So what about like a date for you? Do you have a plan? Do you have certain dates you like to go on? Do you tend to find that you're the one in charge of those decisions?
Yes, but also just like there's the theater of the thing of like, if I hate it, then we're just doing drinks. And I have a thing that I will say I'm busy, so I'm not going to go to that. But if I don't hate it, I'll go to a second location, which is dinner. And then like all this, like, how am I going to leave? Like, what lie am I going to tell to leave? Yeah, I always like to do an activity in which case you will always be associated with that fun activity. The fun that you're getting from bowling will be associated with you. Equally, if the date is shitty, you get to play bowling. So that's also fun. Play bowling? You get to bowl is what you get to do. Play bowling. I've never bowled in my life.
I really like that. I think one thing you might call me out on is that when I was little, and I think this is a reflection of something, I really thought going to the cinema was a great date because I was like, well, then we've got something to talk about. And I think it says a lot about me that I thought we needed to watch something for 2 hours in order for me to have enough to say.
In complete silence, right next to each other. Oh, God.
In hindsight, it's so weird. And I'm not against, like, by all means, as a date when you're with somebody. Great date. Go to a situation where you don't have to talk to each other for 2 hours, but you can still hold hands and spend time together.
Right.
Maybe then it's preferable. I don't know. Maybe it was a reflection of shyness.
Also, like, there's only so much you could do when you're younger. Like, you can't go to bars or, like, you have to be, like, dropped off at the mall. What else are you going to do? Go to Claire's and get your ears pierced?
That would be quite hardcore. And so I like what you mentioned about the plan of having something afterwards, right? That it doesn't even have to be real, because I think Matthew Hussey, the like dating expert, I'm doing air quotes, as if you ever can quite be an expert on this, but he talks about
I'm an expert. I don't know what you're talking about.
Right,
I'm
so
amazing.
Other than Olga... He talks about that a lot where you have something that's going on after the date and it doesn't even have to be real, but it means you've got an excuse to cut the date off at a certain point if you want to. Or if you stay, it's a way of showing your interest because you've cancelled plans to spend more time with them.
This tip can be portrayed as like cool pickup technique. But at the end of the day, is it not just not politeness? It's just better than being like, I don't like you enough. Because like for women, that might be dangerous because they like if they're on a like a straight date, a dude can get really fucking angry and stalk them and shit, which is not fun. I mean, I'm sure this happens in both ends. I just am personally like I know that sometimes the reason you say I have drinks with other people isn't because you're like a cool pickup artist, but because like you're genuinely just scared to say that you don't like this person, nor do you want to like hurt their feelings. Like if they're perfectly nice and you're just not vibing. I don't know if it's like a cool scheming thing to say you're leaving to do another thing, or it's just like a polite way out. The way you can frame it is different.
Yeah, I actually totally agree. And it is so fucked up that that's still the way women have to think. The behavior that creates that is what needs to be tackled. But I do something similar in that I tend to, and this is maybe a reflection of how intensely I schedule my life. Everything in my calendar has a start and an end. So I even do that with dates. You know, on one hand, that could sound like really cold, like I've decided, oh, I'm giving an hour or 2 hours or however long to this date. But actually, it's sort of, it's in their interest, because I don't really think anybody wants to go on a date that lasts 4 hours and is really open-ended and you don't know what you're doing. You know, at a certain point, you're like sat in a bar and you're like, everybody around us has left. What is going on? Why are we still here? So it's actually in the other person's best interest that I like the first date to be a shorter one with a good start and end time. I don't obviously tell them this. Like you, I will just kind of wrap the date up or ask for the check or whatever at a certain point, and politely then we finish. And the fun thing about people in this country is they're generally really respective of that kind of politeness. They know the role, and if you're getting a bill, then they know it's coming to an end. So that's why I find your approach interesting, because it could be taken as like it's very planned, but equally it's off the data, right? You've been on enough dates where you're like, I know how to try and not make this awkward for the other person. And that's what I'm like as well. I'm like, a first date that is too long is very confusing and stressful and exhausting, so we'll have a nice short one, and then we'll go back to our respective best friends, discuss the date, and then decide what our next move is.
Yeah, of course.
And so my next question to you is, where do you find that line between planning out the date for success and planning to the level where it's creepy? Because I think that's different if you're a man or you're a woman.
Ooh, that's a very good question. That is a very good question. Planning to the point.
Like, you've not decided what they're drinking. For example, there's certain things we're not planning.
Okay, so I think this is quite a mathematical question, actually. Thank you very much. I think there's a direct correlation between how much you like them, how much you know them, and how much planning you're entitled to do. It's the same as, like, if you're planning a date too much for the first ever date, the person won't feel special because they know that you don't know them. Like, if someone, like, puts out all the bells and whistles on the very first date with me, I'll be like, oh, this is not about me. This is about you wanting to be liked, or you being the protagonist of your own story. So, like, as long as the kind of coefficient of how long you've known each other, how much you like each other, and the effort is more or less similar, that's fine. So, like, if it's a third date, I want a third date level of investment and a third date level of effort. If the effort is on the first date, fuck that. If you're putting the same amount of effort in the first date as you are in the 11th date, also fuck that.
Wow. I mean, I'm taking that in because I'm not entirely sure if you gave an answer so much as you gave a formula, but I think that's how your mind works.
But do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Okay, that you, it's got to be within context.
Well, because, like, if people are planning the first date, that's like love bombing, essentially, isn't it? It's like whatever, that's the trendy term for it, when, like, someone just showers you with affection right away, whereas, like, the ego in you is, like, really tempted to accept it and be like, I am special, but, like, you know in your heart of hearts that this is bullshit and this is not about you and this is about a person being, like, lonely or wanting control.
Yeah, and you can't trust it either, because we're all complicated human beings and they can't know that they care about you that much that quickly. And this is something I find baffling about dating apps, right? That there's this, and maybe I'm too old for it, but there's this mentality a lot of people seem to have of they just want to be on there and chat. Whereas I'm the complete opposite, where I want to get on a date within days of matching with you. Not, again, not in a controlling way, just in, like, with my experience, there's not a huge amount to be gained. You just fall in love with an avatar of a person if you're just messaging
them. Projecting, right?
Exactly. You fill in all the gaps because you don't actually know them. And instead, if we can fast track to trying to get on a date soon, we all know what the messaging is about. It's to meet people. So just get on with it. Overcome. A lot of it is maybe for me being more extroverted than most people, but I just want to get on with it and meet the person. And then if they smell horrible, or if they've lied about their appearance and the photos are all, then we've ruled them out there.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. I think especially early days, we don't even realize how much projecting we're doing. And a lot of the time I hear so many stories about, like, people chatting for ages and then they meet and they're like, oh, they lied to me. It's like, no, they didn't lie to you. You just projected the shit out of them and they weren't exactly what you imagined in your fucking head. And so we don't even realize how much projecting we're doing.
Mm. And I was speaking to an upcoming guest on the show last night, and he was talking about The Social Dilemma. Have you seen that documentary on Netflix?
No, please tell me.
Right, so it's fascinating. What are you even chugging? The gamers can't see it.
I'm chugging flavored sparkling water that I'm absolutely addicted to. It's called Ugly.
All right, well, there you go. You've promoted that. So the Netflix show I'm going to promote. Look at you holding it up like an ad. So it's a documentary, basically, and it looks at how AI is dangerous in social media. If I was to like boil it down to a sentence, and looking at the fact that we've come to think of the social media algorithms as being there to show us the most fun content, but actually it's there to provoke a reaction, and it doesn't really matter what that reaction is. So if something keeps making us angry and we keep putting a little angry reaction on Facebook, we'll see more things that make us angry. And that's a big part of how we're in this very divided society, and our content that we're seeing is being tailored to us. It's dangerous. And with you having a computing background, I want to know what you think of that in terms of dating apps, because the equivalent there is a lot of dating apps are not designed for you to actually meet somebody. They're designed for engagement. They want you to swipe as much as possible. So how do you feel about that? And do you think that's a fair analysis?
Essentially, what it is gamification. And you get so addicted getting matches, like having this seemingly unending pool of options, that at the end of the day, what it feels like isn't I'm here to meet someone. It's I'm here to get the most amount of points, which is matches in the situation. And because you keep seeing these like photos, you're obviously given this false perception that you have unlimited options, that you could be dating all of these people, that you could fuck all of these people, which obviously isn't true. And a lot of the time, having that option, not even the option, because it's not a real option. You're not going to have sex with 100 people. You're not going to have sex with 1,000 people. Half of these people are bots. But the idea that even the possibility
and this
in
is coming
your
from
head
a Russian,
could,
I should
but,
say.
Exactly. No, none of these people are real. They're all me. It almost like it quenches a little bit of a thirst in us, because all we're doing is we're tickling the possibility of having sex with these people. And we almost don't need to have it because we've quenched the kind of the very surface level of that. Yeah, that's what is interesting about them, that you go on the app telling yourself that you're there to meet someone, but you're really there to play a game and to trick your brain into thinking that these people are genuine possibilities. Because I think about like the last time I had one crush, and that was like 20 years ago. And so like now we can have all like a million micro crushes. Oh God, I don't have words for this. I hope it makes sense.
I do know what you mean, because on one hand, it's depressing to think about the technology that increasingly people are meeting each other through actually has different intentions to you, because they're also there to sell ads and sell subscriptions, and that requires a large user base and people that keep coming back and spend longer and longer on the platform. So that's enough to wrap your head around. But then at the same time, it's also fun. They're being successful at it. And I think what you highlighted there is it also feels quite safe, that you get the validation of people matching with you, and they've, you know, custom engineered certain sound effects that are pleasing when you have a match and all of these things. And it's that little dopamine hit of somebody likes me, but as you say, they don't really like you. They just think they like a quick swipe of a photo they saw. And then the danger is if you chat to this person too long before meeting them, then you continue that fantasy and you've got a whole life planned out with them, and they may not even be at all who they say they are.
Also, another thing that you've just reminded me of is that everything you want and hypothetically find attractive or exciting doesn't exist within one person. And that's the reason, like, a lot of the time I'll break up with people, not because I don't like them anymore, but because, like, the amount of times I've broken up with men just because they're not women. And so the fact that, like, here you have this like endless thing. It's like, oh, do you want a hipster? Here's a hipster. Oh, do you want an intellectual? Here's an intellectual. Do you want a nerd? Here's a nerd. Obviously, I have a small pool of things that I'm attracted to. But like, do you want an athlete? Do you want a politician? Do you want like someone younger? Do you want someone older? At the end of the day, you're not attracted to one thing. You're attracted to all these things. So the thing is, when you see these like other things you're attracted to, it's much harder to prove to yourself that the one that you're talking to currently is the one that you want, because you want all of them. And the app gives you the illusion that you can have all of them in a very, very limited way, but the scope is so much bigger.
Yeah, And I think particularly in lockdown, I've been guilty of this because I wasn't really on the apps much. And then lockdown happens and I've got a lot more free time all of a sudden. And I'm sat at home and at times I'm feeling quite lonely. So then I'm getting on the apps. And in my head, I'm saying, I just want to see what's happening. And yeah, it is genuinely fascinating because they've got all these signs reminding people not to meet up with each other. And it's really baffling to be logging into these things that are designed for that. And now all of a sudden they're like, no, no, you can't meet them. You've got to stay on the app with them forever. And I'm like, oh, this is convenient for them, isn't it?
It is just a game, like little Tamagotchis. And you have to keep them alive and feed them.
Yeah,
by messaging them once a day.
And that's what it feels like. And it's all very surreal. And I think to an extent, none of them really feel like real people, right? Because it's just pictures. Like, I don't think our human brains can quite contemplate that all of these people are people with lives and families and opinions and politics. Like, I don't think we're capable of that. And in fact, we're not really meant to be, because you're swiping based on very limited information. And so what started off as like novelty of, I wonder how wild the apps are during this time, then became like me being part of the problem of collecting matches. But I'm like, what else can I do? I don't want to talk to them and lead them on because I'm probably going to get bored.
Savage. No, absolutely savage.
No, listen, right, this is me being honest, because I'm even like this with my friends. I cannot, and maybe it's partly my dyslexia, entertain the like endless chat. I don't do any group chats. I don't do WhatsApp. The whole, it's just too much for me. And so then to do that in my dating is just far too much. So instead, I've been collecting these matches because then I'm like, oh, well, one day the lockdown will be finished and then I can suddenly go meet them. And now I'm realizing I don't think there is some magical day where the lockdown is finished. We've just got to sit here and decide.
How horny are you? You have to ask yourself.
And it even feels like that's the point now, that the rules are getting vaguer and vaguer, just to be like, let's see how long it is until the people fuck up and the government can blame us for the pandemic and the second wave.
Yes, this got political.
There was a whole speech there that I didn't know was coming. So I guess the final thing is, how do you feel about that? Do you judge me for collecting people during a lockdown? To come back
God,
to.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think, like, obviously within reason, but like however you choose to cope with a completely, and I dare I say, unprecedented global cataclysm, is like, if you need to lose a bunch of weight, if you need to gain a bunch of weight, if you need to completely change your sleep patterns, if you need 142 people on an app in order to just keep going, go for it. I mean, obviously, as long as like they're aware of what's happening, like if you're actively like lying to them or like selling them diet pills, I have questions. But yeah, well, oh my God, do whatever you need. And like, I think it's really interesting, actually, how we are supplementing for that lack of human contact in this time. And whether it's Zoom calls, because like there was the time where we were all doing like Zoom pub quizzes and they were like, actually, we hate this. And I think one of the ways that you probably are supplementing is through dating apps. And that's fine.
Yeah. Wow. And yeah. I've just realized I've forgotten to give you any points during this because you're just so fascinating. So just take some points. Just take some points now. And we also need to round up as well. So I think the rule of dating that I'm going to take from this is, if you need to collect people in a global pandemic, then collect people in a global pandemic.
Absolutely.
And do you have one?
Mine is stop projecting.
Yes.
Stop projecting. Stop projecting. It's like, it's not people letting you down. It's you just having a really wild imagination. People don't know what you think of them.
Well, stop that's it. How can they live up to expectations they've not even been informed of?
Yeah. And they got their own shit. They got their own expectations to live up to. Stop projecting.
And I'm going to give you another point because we're making up for lost time.
Thank you very much.
All right. And we'll wrap up there. So if people want to find you online, where should they go?
Please go to www.rockandrollga.com for all of your Olga Koch needs. I'm at rockandrollga on Twitter. I would love for you to buy my vinyl that you could get on my website or on my Twitter. It would mean a lot to me. And you do get an MP3 download with the vinyl, so the vinyl can decorate your home because you don't have a vinyl player, because you have self-respect. But then you can listen to it on your Android or iPhone or iPad or Zoom iPad.
I love that the key product you are selling is really just a status symbol. It's like, that's not useful. Take the little file instead.
basically what I'm selling is a huge cardboard square of my face to decorate your house.
I love it. All right, we'll wrap up there. Thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta,
with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.